Good evening, everyone. Good evening. You've tuned in to Paradigm Shifters. And who are Paradigm Shifters? People that are making a difference in the collective of our species at this incredibly turbulent time on the planet. Our species is in a time of, what would we call it, transformation or change. But I have with me Kathleen Kingdon, who channels Dwal Cool, who also came through Alice Bailey. So he's well known in the spiritual world. But what I love, Kathleen, is you've got out your latest, or maybe one of the latest CD collections called Recession Proofing Your Mind, and also you're working on Earth Healing Day. And I want to say hello to you before I finish my thought. Hello and welcome to the show.
Well, hello and thank you so much. Well, I always appreciate you and your work.
Thank you so much. And also, when we were talking about paradigm shifting, I'm chuckling going, I've been through Matter of Mind, a labyrinth, what is it, the title of it? Maybe the Matter of Mind book, which I carry with me everywhere. And also your recession proofing your mind. And I'm going, boy, are you ever shifting the collective from my perspective? Because by the time I get into these projections that I'm making and everyone else is making, but I'm trying to pick up my own, I realize, what is it? It's kind of almost scary at times when you realize how you've pumped these thoughts and feelings out there and you've sucked them back in from the collective over and over, and we're so able to step out of that and become more authentic and more empowered, which shifts the collective in itself, doesn't it?
Well, it is. And I think one of the most important things for all of us to recognize, you know, in making our own transitions and shifts is the tremendous power of the thoughts and feelings that we've habituated. You know, our mind operates mostly off habit. So if we get up in the morning and it's raining, those of us that like rain go, oh, wow, it's a great day. Those of us who don't like rain say, oh, it's going to be another bummer day. And we're so habituated that we don't even really stop and think, now, is that a choice I really want to make? Is that thought coming from my true essence, or is that just a habit? And I think it seems very overwhelming, at least it has for me.
Well, sometimes I'm embarrassed when I see my projections that I make no choice about. I go, holy.
Well, the scope seems so large. But basically, when we learn that these are just habits of mind, and fortunately, you know, we do have wonderful teachers like Master who keep encouraging us to say it's just a habit. You can change it. It's just a habit. You can change it. But, of course, to change it, we have to be aware of it. So that takes us full circle back to what you were saying about this process of becoming aware of how the mind projects and how it kind of runs our life.
Yeah, it's quite fascinating, isn't it?
It sure is.
So in Recession Proofing Your Mind, what I'm hearing over and over are techniques or ways of doing the work that it takes to go back into. And if I understand it correctly, it's going back into at what you're calling essence mind. And I also am thinking it's also close to the authentic self, isn't it?
Exactly.
So let's talk about recession proofing your mind, because certainly recession is on our minds these days, isn't it?
It is.
And you're saying that we don't, or Dwal Cool is saying we don't actually have to go through a recession, do we?
In a sense, yes. I think I find that all of us want to simplify everything and just say, oh, well, we don't have to do this. But then there's like this big gap from where we are now to where we want to be. And what we need is some kind of tool, or maybe tools and techniques, practices to help us get there. What he says is that all of this is just, he makes it very cute. He says, all you have to do is change your mind. And, of course, we think of that as just in the moment, thinking about one thing or another. He's got something much bigger that he's talking about, with changing the scope or the field of all of our mental energy, which, he sometimes talks about thought feelings and says that they are what create whatever reality that we're functioning in. So, yes, the Recession Proofing Your Mind CD set is a 6 CD set I heartily recommend it to everybody. I love doing it.
It's and very powerful.
Yeah, it was. People have felt like it's made a huge difference in their life, at least the ones that have given me feedback. And it really is about, you know, getting to a place where we can experience the power of our mind. And as long as we're stuck in habituated thought patterns, we don't see any power. All we see is, oh, it's the same old thing again. Oh, I've been there, done that. That wonderful phrase that we think says a lot. And
or Matthew, I'm less than, or I'm not as powerful as so-and-so,
yeah,
that sort
yeah.
of thing. And you talked, I just want to go back to one thing. You were talking about thought fields, and I was working with, of course, I love the book, Matter of Mind, which talks about a lot of this stuff. And then in Recession Proofing Your Mind, I was working on a situation where I felt made smaller than, because something that I didn't realize that I do all the time, and how I project a smaller than feeling so that people around me won't feel badly or something. There's something kind of seems minuscule. But when I brought it up, it came with an anger, and I noticed that there was this field, talk about thought field, there was this thought field of anger that permeated everything that I did for the next day and a half until I kind of got it to move through. I thought that was a very good example.
But it's powerful, because if you don't know the anger is there, and Master says things like, well, you have two choices, and he uses this with anger or guilt or, you know, criticism, critical mind. He said you have two choices. You can either learn to relate to the anger, if that's what it is, and in that case it will ultimately become your teacher. Or the other choice is an unconscious choice, and that is to just relate to everybody else from the anger. And he has this kind of pithy little way of saying things that suddenly make a whole lot clearer, and at least that made a lot clearer for me.
I think it's just wonderful, wonderful experience, because that has just that little episode shifted something in me all the way through everything I do.
And well, then we should say congratulations. we'll count every breakthrough.
And I just want people to know how effective this really is. Eh? It's wonderful. And so what's the goal? Do we get to rise out of it all, rise out of our projections?
Well, Master says it's not so much rising above it as it is cutting through. And he often uses the imagery of a dense fog, or sometimes he uses the imagery of kind of a veil of fabric or something, and that it's that rising above doesn't always take care of the residual issues. And so we might be able to rise above something in one moment, and then in the next moment find that it gets triggered by another experience or something. And he says the better option is to cut through it. And he used to use a lot the imagery of saying that one's life, it's as if we're running around in this great tubular column, and on the inside of the column is the it's the consistency of a projector screen, and anybody that's sat and watched videos or home movies on a projector screen know that it's not a smooth surface, it's very reflective for light, but it gives a crisp image of whatever's projected on it. And he says it's like the mind projects in 360 degrees all the way around us. So as long as we're in that tube, no matter which way we're looking, all we're seeing is what the mind's projecting. But if we can cut a little slice in that column and see what's on the other side, he says that's like cutting through all of our habituated mind states.
And it's that does include the feelings, doesn't it?
Well, yes, and basically he kind of sees them as going together, because, he will say that generally the thought comes first, but sometimes the feeling comes so rapidly that one isn't even aware that there was a prior thought. It just seems like the feeling burst through, but basically something had to cause it, and I think as we all know, you know, it's our thoughts and feelings that really give our beliefs substance. And so we've gone to a lot of, let's say, abundance workshops, and we come back, we've got all the prosperity lingo, but life doesn't change very much. And that's really what he wants to work on a whole lot in the workshop that's coming up. Actually, there's two of them. One will be in Denver on August 14th and 15th, and then the next one is in Canmore, Alberta, Canada. That one will be in September 25th and 26th. But this whole idea of really discovering ourselves outside of the parameters or boundaries of our habituated thoughts and feelings, well, I find that a very provocative notion to try and figure out, well, so there's the me I think I am, but who am I really? Mm-hmm. And he frequently uses that analogy, too. He says there's two of you. There's the you think you are, and then there's the you, or the who, and he puts that in capital letters, you really are. And that's what we're trying to discover, and somehow that piece of our essence self exists outside this projecting cube that we kind of live in, perhaps for lifetimes.
And that's a scary part, perhaps for lifetimes. So let's go back to your workshops. I'm coming for sure to the one in Denver. I'm very excited about it. And what is it, a lot of exercises? Because I noticed the CD set has some tremendous meditations that help you access different levels of consciousness and, I guess, what, go in and clear out where you're being driven. Would you say that we're being driven from the subconscious?
Well, I would say mostly we're being driven by our karma, and these are these habituated thought patterns. Now, granted, a lot of them, I think a lot of them live in the subconscious, but there's a lot of them that exist in the unconscious mind as well. And usually the patterns that really don't work in our lives, and nearly all of us have some, those are hidden away in the unconscious. And so basically the subconscious, as I understand it from Master, sort of stands between the unconscious, which we are completely unconscious of. The subconscious we can kind of get in touch with. We have intuitive hits, or we can do visualizations and kind of get some realizations about what goes on there, or the kind of energy that comes up into the conscious mind, but that's less likely with our unconscious patterns. And
is the unconscious more non-specific, meaning that it just goes on and it's not specific to you or karma?
Well, I'll give you an example. I used to be a psychotherapist for quite a few years, and one day I had a person come in, and I did was say, how are you? And this woman lambasted me. I mean, she was just, I've never experienced it to be so cutting and so cruel and so whatever. And it took me actually the rest of the 45 minutes or 50 minutes to kind of recover from that. And when we got to the end of the session, I said to her, I need to ask you something. You know, when you came in and I said, how are you? And you said, and I gave her back the spiel that was just like razor sharp. The woman was totally shocked. She said, Kathleen, I'd never say anything like that to you. That sounds like what my mother said to me.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Well, the thing is, she was completely unconscious, even to the fact that she had said it within the past hour. And so that's how we can find when we're the things that are really steeped in the unconscious are aptly named. People don't even know when they do them, say them, become them, or whatever. So that, of course, takes, if we can work with the subconscious very well to get that nice and clean, usually it begins aiding in cleaning out the things that are in the unconscious. But these are levels that are completely unknown to the person until they're pointed out. And then, unfortunately, they're painfully aware of what goes on. But at first, it feels like there's no way to stop that because it is unconscious. It comes up unbidden. Suddenly, it's just there and so on. Hmm. But so basically, yeah, we're working with all of these things. And the landscape of the mind, which was part of the subtitle of the book, Matter of Mind, basically, it's some help with negotiating the labyrinth of the mind. We don't know where we're going, and sometimes it's like entering the labyrinth with a blindfold on. And while certainly I think a lot has been learned through psychological wisdom, there's even a deeper dimension. And at least what I found when I was practicing psychotherapist was that if I could not tap a person's spiritual dimension, and to me it didn't really matter what version of spirituality the person hung out in, but if I could not tap with them their own spiritual place of where all the answers do not exist, there's some mystery and some awe left.
Is that the superconscious?
Yeah, there's no real healing possible. So we're working with this huge thing, which we just call the landscape of the mind. It goes on forever. And, you know, working with it can seem very, very big. But as we began to really look at how many thoughts and feelings that we have that are actually habituated, just like the incident of getting up and seeing it raining.
Mm-hmm. That's very interesting, isn't it? I'm just mesmerized by the whole thing that you told about the woman who spoke harshly or was really strange, and it was just a download from her mother from the unconscious. How did you help her access that and neutralize it, or could you do that?
Well, I often, certainly with psychotherapy, I don't go for neutralizing it at first, because often many people that come in have not done a great deal of spiritual work on themselves. It's wonderful, of course, if you have clients who have a lot of background in working with their mind or seeing from a bigger perspective than just the individual self, but many people don't have that. Mm-hmm. So, and actually, what I found as a psychotherapist was that they do have their own answers, but they don't know that. Mm-hmm. And I don't even know, or I may not know, what those answers are for them either. But eventually, if we can just sit with recognizing what's going on, or in that case, we'll say what went on in that session. You know, I happen to know that she went home and for 2 weeks was totally depressed about it. But then little by little, her own answer began to arise. Mm. And of course, at some level, it is always about seeing oneself beyond the scope of the pattern.
So it's like once you recognize that something has happened, you can observe it and it will rise into your conscious? Would it be that?
Well, sort of. Usually it's a process. Mm-hmm. And what generally happens for most people, because the subconscious is amazingly brilliant. And so this person had this happen in her therapy session with me. Then she goes back into her life, and funniest thing, it happened one day to her husband, and he was shocked. He'd never seen that. So it happens another day to a coworker. Not, these weren't the same lines, but it was the same energy. Well, after three encounters like that, this woman was really motivated on figuring out what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, then that leads us into a discussion of what are unconscious complexes, and that's all, you know, highly psychological jargon. But the bottom line is I don't go for trying to have somebody change this on the spot.
Mm-hmm.
That's usually very intimidating for a person. But if we can just say, well, where do you think this comes from? In her case, she knew exactly. And so then I said, okay, what we have to do now is get you aware of every single time that starts to arise so that you can catch it before it goes off. Because you see what happens, and this is how you can tell it's a truly an unconscious pattern, is that you and everybody else will go to sleep right before it happens, and then you might not even know you're doing it.
Mm.
Well, by the time the third time happened for her, she was very aware she was doing it, but she couldn't stop it. And that's quite normal.
Mm. You know?
But she had come in two experiences. By the time the third one got there, she was fully conscious of what was going on. Now, that's the point where things start to shift, because
wow,
it's no longer an unconscious pattern.
Wow.
Anything that is unconscious, one has no power over whatsoever. It's just the acting out or the playing out of whatever karmic patterns got instilled in the psyche. But once one begins to see, oh, there it is again, and to be conscious
of it. So it's really healing that it came up, even though it was uncomfortable.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. Because suddenly it could no longer be hidden from her.
Mm-hmm, I see.
And that there's real power in being able to know exactly what's going on, even if we don't like it.
Well, let's jump to recession-proofing your mind, because in this day and age when so much is going on, and you've just explained the complexity of our minds and our subconscious and our unconscious and how much programming on money and so on and wealth has come through our karma, maybe we could have Tuol Kuhl come in at this point, you think, and help us with the collective mind and recession-proofing.
All right. Hang tight and I'll get him.
Thanks, Kathleen.
Well, good afternoon, or evening, excuse me, Veronica. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. I'm very pleased to be talking to you, and I'm sure many of our listeners are as well.
And I with you and your listeners. What a glorious thing to be able to come together, even if we aren't in the same room. we can create a space within our minds where we are all sitting together just talking about these things that are so very important. So I celebrate not only our connection and our ability to talk in this direct format, but also I celebrate the presence of people who aren't really present in person, but who mentally and spiritually are present.
Thank you. So do I. And I'm just smiling as you say that, because isn't that a collective in itself that could actually impact the greater collective if we get your wisdom and ability to release some of our, for example, abundance woes? Can't we do it collectively?
Well, we must do it collectively.
Globally.
And it's absolutely imperative at this time on the planet, because you see, if you really look particularly at how the Western mind has worked, one of the things that you can see is that it has pushed the notion of the individual, the stark and the individual force of one being against all the rest. It's really been pushed almost to the maximum, and it's not working. What it's doing is depleting the planet. It's working havoc in relationships. It's making it very difficult to establish peace on this wonderful planet. And so it's time that we really recognize this isn't working. There's a big piece missing. And what's missing is that you and I and everybody else are all different pieces of the same self. When people can truly recognize that, and I'm talking about something that's deeper than just a cognitive approach. Oh, yes, I understand. We're all one. We look like we're not, but I get it. That doesn't do much, really. Mm-hmm. We have to come from an experiential level. And so,
is that the thought field? Would you call it a thought field?
It is a thought field. It's a creative field. Mm. And one of the things that we're going to be touching upon in the workshop that I didn't touch upon at all in the CD series is really looking at how things work in the universe, how energy works. And it's, many people have taken prosperity workshops and not much has changed. For some, maybe some has changed, and for others, not much at all. Mm-hmm. So in looking at that, we have to say there's something amiss with how whatever they took in from that learning experience lines up with what works in the universe. And so basically, when we really look at the universe as one single whole thing, not a bunch of different stars with their planets and their quasars and their moons and all these different things, but if we can really see it as one functioning organism, now it doesn't look like a human organism, nor anything smaller than a human, but if we can begin to think in those terms, then we recognize that the thought that one being has, even if it's a fear thought of a little mouse that's running from the cat that got out and is chasing it, that fear thought does something to the whole of that universe. Now, because the fear thought of a little mouse is quite small, we may not see it happening, but I can tell you that there is a resonance vibration that goes out from that little fearful mouse that is felt throughout the entire universe. Well, if we come back to Earth and we look at what a recession is, it's a group experience, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
So we have a whole group of people projecting some kind of remembered fear into their future. And because thoughts and feelings are creative things, they have no choice then but to draw back to them reflections of their own thoughts. That's how that big projector screen that Kathleen was telling you about works. Mm. You see it because the mind projects it. Then the consciousness sees it and believes it. And so we can just say, as a lot of people do, well, I just won't believe that anymore. But you see, they may be able to control what their conscious mind believes to some extent. But they're not in touch with what goes on in the subconscious and unconscious. And those beliefs are even more powerful because you have less access access to them through your conscious thinking.
And it occurs to me here that where our unconscious is also collective amongst many of us, that can kind of weigh down the transformational capacities, can't it?
Precisely. Mm. And it can weigh it down not only for a person, but believe it or not, for an entire planet.
Mm-hmm.
Were we not going through the kinds of turmoil and tumultuous goings on, I think, well, most people would clearly feel differently. But if you look at that tragic oil accident in the Gulf of Mexico, I mean, if you really look at that and say, well, what is that representing? They got deep enough into the core of the earth, they tapped into some volcanic energy, and so the thing just wouldn't quit spewing. Well, now we have what we think, or some think is the solution. They put a cap on it, but that hasn't done very much for the plants and animals who have suffered excruciating deaths. And this happens at the plant level as well. They suffer. It's not, they don't have the same consciousness as, say, an animal or a human, but that doesn't mean they don't suffer.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we look at this, we have to say, well, what does all that toxic darkness represent? Well, it's a time for cleaning up the collective levels of deceit and greed and corruption and negligence that have just been normalized, you see? I mean, there are many people who think if you're in business, it doesn't matter whether you render a valid service for the fee you take. All business is about is getting the other person's money.
Mm.
Now, that's basically corrupt. And if that exists as a kind of normal way of doing business, then the world cannot avoid seeing deceit as a result of that, negligence, all of these things that grow out of this kind of corruption. Because, you see, corruption comes, and this is the really impoverished state of mind, when one believes that he or she is separate from this gigantic force of mind that is creating the reality the planet now experiences. So it's a very big picture, isn't it?
It is, and I'm thinking that all the earthquakes and volcanoes, all kinds of things, are actually of benefit to breaking up that huge unconscious one mind as well, isn't it? I mean,
well, we hope so. Certainly,
or
those
it's possibility.
Of us on this plane are rooting for that.
Mm-hmm.
And it is true that many people are coming into more of an awakened state than they were. But one of the things that has happened in, say, the last 30 or so years is that people in the West particularly have gotten less and less concerned, it's a type of going to sleep, you see, about where their oil or where their food or where anything that they use comes from.
Right.
And so they just want it. Now, I know I'm generalizing here, but this is the cloud of darkness that's emptying into the Gulf, you see. And just as we saw happening in the Gulf, the lives of the most innocent, which is the dolphins, the pelicans, the bluefin tuna, and on, these are the ones who pay the greater price for the learning of the rich and powerful. And frankly, the rich and powerful don't always get it because often they're looking in a different direction, you see. And so
they don't actually have to look, do they? Whereas some of us do.
In a sense, it's kind of an illusion. They think they don't have to look. Sooner or later they will, although you're very right about one thing. It may not be in this current life for them.
Mm-hmm.
You see, and it would be much better if they could look now because they could do something about the things that have been set in motion. So if they wait to work on it a lifetime or two into the future, it's much harder because sometimes one doesn't understand where these things came from.
But how many of us does it take to move a large amount of the collective if we're all functioning at a different time? You know what I mean? If some people are primed in their karma to be ready in this life and many are not, how do you make a huge shift?
Well, the interesting thing is it doesn't take large numbers. I would say if we could get 1% of the planet really highly functioning around seeing what is and then releasing that way of seeing and seeing in another way, we could make a huge impact on the whole world. You see, if you go back and read those studies that were done on transcendental meditators who went
right
to various cities,
yeah.
For a certain length of time, they simply sat and meditated in a specific way that puts out the energy of peace and loving kindness and so on. I mean, it's a specific meditation that they were well trained in. It doesn't take that many people. In every city they went to, the crime rate went down. There was fewer arguments happening in people's homes. It just everything changed. There was fewer shootings on the street, and they would go to New York and Washington, D.C., and places that have a lot of street crime. However, the interesting thing to note is that it didn't stay in place. And if you say why, it's because they quit meditating and all went back home.
Hmm.
So this really says something. It does take a critical mass to pull off great shifts. But that mass, if you just take 25 people off the street and say, oh, here, come in here, I'm going to instruct you on how to do this meditation and we're going to stop the crime in New York City, it probably wouldn't work. But when you get people who really know what they are doing, who have spent years practicing how to generate a focus and actually an energy vortex of peace and kindness, then that vortex is much more powerful than, say, it would be if it were just created by folks who'd never done it before.
Hmm.
So,
they don't have to be in the same place, do they?
No, they don't. But they have to have good focus. And so, anyway, as you know, because I know you've been to the Earth Healing Day website, mm-hmm. but that's what Earth Healing Day is all about. And actually, I had so many students feeling totally depressed and overwhelmed by the situation in the Gulf,
mm-hmm.
and that's just the American students, you know. Other people in other countries feel differently about it because many of them, take Nigeria, for example, has been so decimated and polluted with terrible oil spills that they're probably, you know, two generations or so, at least in the Niger Delta, have lived with oil in their water. All of their fishing and their croplands have been decimated.
Wow.
Most of their fresh water is soiled.
Oh my.
And so they look at what's going on in the Gulf, and it doesn't seem like that big of a deal.
Mm-hmm.
But to people here, it seems like a big deal. And what I noticed was how helpless so many of my students were feeling about this. So we just picked a date, which is August 15th, to be Earth Healing Day. And what we want to do is have people around the entire world take the hour from noon to 1 in their own time zone. And during that time, perhaps do some, if you choose to pray, that's fine. If they choose to meditate, that's fine. I've also suggested the power of chanting the syllable Om, because that's a very, very powerful syllable that carries with it the energy of dissolution. And we do have some things that we need collectively to dissolve. And so for that hour, then, if we could get people in virtually every time zone around the world doing this, it would take a full 24 hours for that wave of healing energy to encircle the planet. And so once again, while it's important to have people who are skilled at this, it's also important to have people who have never done this before, because it allows them to feel as if they are participating in something that could be not only a turning point for the planet, but a turning point for them as well, you see?
Mm-hmm.
So I'll do my little commercial here and tell all of your listeners to go to www.earthhealingday.com. And there's some meditations on there that you can download free of charge to help with this. One is a meditation to prepare the planet for August 15th. There's another one that is where you hang a pagoda over the Gulf of Mexico to clean off some of the negative energy
mm-hmm.
that has been arising since this travesty has gone on. And I just recently added another one. I was talking to a group of people, and they were asking me, what's the most important energy for manifestation? And I said, compassion. This shocked everybody. Mm-hmm. You know, they didn't get it. So anyway, we have a little, almost 11 minute and 40 some odd second meditation on compassion that people can just download and do as they will. So then you can see other people and companies that have signed on to be partners with this. And I think it's quite encouraging. And we would encourage any of your listeners who have their own companies or websites, or even as individuals who would like to just publicly state that they're a partner to this effort.
And there's a wonderful global sort of an icon that moves that shows how many people around the world have signed on.
Yes.
It's wonderful.
It's an amazing little gimmick, isn't it? It's mm-hmm. wonderful.
Or is it signed on or just maybe gone to look at the website? But
that
it's really intriguing.
That one has to do with just looking at the website. And when you look at it, you'll see we can really use some help with Africa, the Middle East, certainly Russia, and, you'll see when you get on certain parts of Asia as well. Other parts of Asia are kind of hooked in. But there are a lot of hits in Europe and in North America, but we'd like to get more all the way around because this indicates that people are beginning to think about this, even in some kind of remote places. Maybe they've never thought of that before, that I could take 1 hour of my time and make a difference in the health of my planet.
And I love that in your organized approach to it, people will be linked as community around the world. I really am touched by that.
Yes, mm-hmm. and I think many people, particularly those who are sensitive to energy, will actually be able to feel this wave. As I said, we're a little weak in some places in terms of getting to a critical mass of people. But basically, the idea has pretty much gone out around the world. So that's very exciting to watch, isn't it?
Oh, I'm really looking forward to that. And that will be the second day of your workshop or your seminar.
Yes, it will.
Excellent.
So we're going to take a break right in the middle of the day and spend an hour focusing on the world and using our thoughts and our energies and probably our voices as well.
I'm really looking forward to that. And I want to go back to the critical, you've referred to critical mass a number of times. I'm going like, what? If we're all coming together with our karma, sort of waving our karma in our projections and so on, when does the critical mass actually take hold? Is it something we just have to keep doing and keep developing a critical mass over and over again?
Yes, it is. However, it's very much like another way of looking at critical mass would be to use the example of the 100th monkey situation where after, and nobody knows it was exactly 100 monkeys, but basically on a little island, these monkeys, some of them were eating some, what was a plant of the Dioscorea family. It was a type of sweet potato. Anyway, and some of them started washing it, and they taught their offspring. Well, at a certain point, when enough of them had learned how to wash their sweet potatoes, the same breed of monkey on other islands and other continents began doing it too, because it had gone into the collective unconscious for the monkey kingdom, and suddenly, this is just the way it's done. Well, that's a type of critical mass. When we got to whatever that number was, it changed the eating experience for all the monkeys who ate these kinds of foods. So, in a way, that's what we're looking at.
Well, if we're talking also about projections and having our mind filled with ideas, but we're doing conscious projections, can't we consciously project so that we're creating a critical mass all around the globe, even if we haven't got some of those countries represented?
Well, that's precisely what I'd like to see. In other words,
well, let's
the
do
mind
it.
Projects all the time. And whether one is aware of it or not aware of it, that's how minds work. Mm-hmm. It sees something, and then it reacts to it in one way or another. It makes meaning of it. And so if one can use one's mind by projecting the kinds of thoughts that are good for oneself and good for the planet, then it does make a difference. And this is why when you go to any kind of a workshop where people are trying to teach, let's say they're teaching prosperity, they all start to work with the mind immediately. Mm-hmm. You've got to think like a prosperous person if you're going to draw prosperity into your life. This is true with healthy relationships or even a healthy body. Mm-hmm. So if one can project the kind of thoughts that go with whatever it is one wants to create, then guess what? That has to manifest, you see?
Mm-hmm. And so here in this time of really strange economic illuminations, meaning we get to see the major deceptions that are going on all over the world, and the challenges there, we don't have to succumb to that as a reality, do we?
No. It's probably a little more complicated than we're saying it, but ultimately you're absolutely correct.
Mm-hmm. And so we could actually project what you're saying, a prosperous self. But I noticed on the CDs, you're pretty careful about telling people that we have to be, the world of credit cards and so on, people began to get really vague and numb about their financial affairs as well, right?
Right.
So my memory is that you're telling us to also keep track of what's going on in the material. Don't deny it. Don't go into a trance about it. Is that right?
Yes. You know, I could name, I won't, because I don't think they'd like it, but I have numbers of students who have made an awful lot of money in their life, but they can't hang on to it because they're not paying any attention to where it goes. It just kind of comes, and then they don't know where it goes. You see, it's released somewhere. And until one can be very conscious of the whole process, and we don't want to do this from a perspective of being stingy or hoarding it, but because we have to recognize there's enough, or there won't be enough, you see. There is enough. It may not be distributed all that equilaterally right now, but there is enough. And if people can understand, A, there's enough, and then show up in their own life enough to watch, well, what do I do when I make this big commission off selling that house? Or what do I do after I get my promotion at work and I get, let's say, well, in the good old days when the raises used to be 10%, most of them aren't now. But even if it's only a 2% raise, what do I do with that money? How does it affect me? At first, it feels very good. But then, a little bit further down the line, I realize I'm no further ahead in terms of creating savings than I was before I got the promotion. So we have to say what happens. And I'm sure many of your listeners have heard or read the studies that have been done on people who have won lotteries.
Right.
And within a short amount of time, they're right back where they used to be because, number one, they're not paying attention. And they're not trying to use skillful means to get to an area where they perhaps haven't previously occupied. So they return to those habituated thoughts and feelings, whatever they are. And whatever the reason they didn't have any money prior to the bonus or the raise or the commission, it's the same reason they don't have it after. So you're very right. Everything in life is truly about waking up. Mm-hmm. And when you wake up, you have to look at how you behave, what kind of thoughts and beliefs you hold, and how those bring something back into your life, you see? Mm-hmm. If you're asleep, you don't pay attention to anything, and you just live sometimes for lifetimes, not even being awake to recognize it's the habits of karma that are running the life, you see?
Yes, trance after trance after trance.
Trance after trance after trance.
Now, do you see, I don't know how you feel about this kind of question, but do you see us creating, or at least some levels of consciousness creating a world, a win-win, economically win-win kind of reality here?
Well,
I guess I'm thinking in country form or global form.
Well, I hope so. You see, when someone really catches the vision that the person they're trying to cheat out of a dime or two is another part of themselves, why, you don't want to cheat yourself.
Mm-mm.
You know, you want to be careful that nobody else cheats you. But this whole idea of cheating oneself is kind of crazy, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And when people finally, and this probably will happen one at a time until we get to a critical mass, and then it should just catch on everywhere, that when I cheat anybody, I'm cheating myself.
Mm-hmm. So it's kind of an inner, it's like we're our own PC in a way. We have to get to that inner empowerment.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. What do you think the shift really means? It's been bandied about in such a way as nobody's really sure what it means anymore.
Well, I think there are many, many options or many possibilities, and it all depends on how the collective understanding is working, how the collective creative process is taking place. And so clearly it's going to be some kind of a shift in consciousness. And when some people talk about poles shifting, well, if you mean reversing their polarities, this happens every, somewhere between 15 and 30,000 years anyway. Sometimes it's longer than that. But basically, then that has to do with the electromagnetic field around the Earth. But when these things happen, they can be very powerful because gravity, you see, as well as the electromagnetic field, all have or exert a kind of influence on consciousness. And so if you can, let's say, step into a place on the Earth, and there are a few of them around, where there is no magnetic field, you can drop your past. I mean, it's incredible for dropping karma. And
I'm going there right now.
How about that? Well, some of them, if you ever visit some of the pyramids in Egypt, and where you find the king's chambers in those pyramids, often, not all of them, but often you will find that they were constructed in a place that has a much lesser magnetic field. And in the old Egyptian temples of initiation, they were all constructed on... These people were very sensitive. You see, they could feel the difference. Most people don't feel whether there's any magnetic force or not, but there were times when people did feel these things. And so these initiation temples would be constructed over them. And many times there would be a chamber where a person would be put into a stone sarcophagus and kind of wheeled into this chamber that had no magnetic field. And of course, at that point, consciousness is completely freed, so anything could happen. Mm-hmm. And there were people, let's say, that wanted to be initiated but who really weren't probably clear enough to handle it. And let's say a person had, and this happened quite a bit, a fear of snakes or vipers. Well, when they'd be put into that sarcophagus and rolled into there, if the fear came up, all of these snakes would manifest, or seem to, in the sarcophagus with the person.
Okay.
And the person might even die of snake bite. But when the sarcophagus was rolled back out and the lid removed, all they would see is there's a person dead with snake bites all over them. There were no snakes. If the person, on the other hand, could realize this is just something, a piece of non-clarity in their own creative process that was arising, instantly the snakes disappeared because they weren't really there anyway, although belief in their reality was potent enough to cause death, you see?
Mm-hmm.
So when we talk about a shift, what we're really looking at is a point of some kind, and I think we could do this in many different ways, but where the consciousness moves together in one direction or the other. And this is where it gets a little tricky, because the closer we get to healing the planet, or should we say the greater the potential to heal the planet, also the greater the potential to destroy the planet.
Right.
These paradoxes always arise in sets of two, and they're opposites, you see.
Mm-hmm.
So what we need is the critical mass of people who understand these things and who are willing to let their consciousness be used by this vaster flow that seeks healing and wholeness, you see?
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of words. Did I help with that question?
Yes, you did, because I'm thinking of many different, you know, the wisps of things that come through are things like we're about to face a conscious evolution and a huge, huge leap. And then there's 2012 and all that we hear about that. And I've heard a number of times that the world will split so that those beings who choose the same third dimensional consciousness, the separate consciousness, and those who choose consciousness as their tool of evolution will be living in different realities and will not experience each other anymore. I've heard a lot of that and wondered if you had any feedback on that as well. Because how you explained it, I'm going, that would explain the split worlds too, wouldn't it?
Well, there are many worlds already going on in the same space that the planet is on. There are many realities. In fact, there are some people that you could say are living in the 14th century right now.
Hmm.
I mean, they don't know it's the 21st century. Of course, in the 14th, they didn't know it was the 14th. And I guess it all depends on where you start counting.
That was a really nice Renaissance time, wasn't it?
Yeah. But if you're living in Asia, of course, the 14th century doesn't occur at the same time it does in Europe, although it's sort of been accepted now to accept the European calendar. But nonetheless, we have to say that there are multiple realities going on all the time. And I'm sure you've had experiences where maybe something happened, or and someone was in the experience with you, and after it was over, you started talking about it, and you suddenly realized you weren't in the same experience.
Well, you know, siblings, you start right there.
So, in a sense, this is the way it already is. It's just that it's not perceivable. You see.
This is a very exciting time to live, isn't it?
I think it is, yes.
And do you think we would get to the point where we can cruise through many different realities by choice, option?
Well, I think people already can. In fact, they do it all the time when they're reliving a past event, whether it's one they consider positive or one they consider negative, but the mind keeps going back to it. They actually are transported to that time inwardly, clearly not in the outward reality, but basically, and that's sort of done at will. You know, one can choose to remember negative things or positive things or whatever, and as one, I mean, what is remembering but putting it together again? Remembering, you see?
Well, so if you're talking about how everything is karma and projections, is that it's the remembering on a deep level that we keep tripping over, isn't it? Isn't that what karma is?
Right. Yeah. In other words, there was a time when planet Earth was known as a paradise, and you will find paradise traditions or let's say mythology of one kind or another in virtually every spiritual tradition on the Earth. And, you know, it's kind of interesting that somehow they all came up with this. If it's the Jewish-Christian Bible, you get the Garden of Eden, you see? That was a paradise until certain things happened, according to this story. But then you can take virtually any tradition around the world, and if you go back far enough, you will find that every tradition kind of speaks of a time. This is maybe where the Hebrew story is a little bit different, but of a time when gods and goddesses lived here. They were completely telepathic. They were totally in touch with nature. Some stories hold that they crossed into this dimension by walking down a rainbow. And some people have actually been referred to as the rainbow people. When bodies were less dense, and certainly, you know, part of what makes bodies so dense is karma. But basically, these beings came. And if you go back to the ancient Hindu tradition, you will see that, I guess it would be Shaivism, that was the first version that at least anybody knows anything about. But it was believed that in the early times it was called the Golden Age. You see, the West believes that we're headed toward a Golden Age, mm-hmm. whereas the East said, oh, that was a long time ago, a long, long, long time ago, epochs ago. But the Golden Age was the time when people knew they were divine. There wasn't any question. They didn't hurt each other. They didn't argue with each other. You know, they actually didn't suffer nearly as much because they knew who they were.
But were in this dimension then?
Well, yes.
Well,
and that was followed by a Silver Age where people spent their time remembering that gods and goddesses used to walk here. And that was followed by a Bronze Age, which the ancient Sanskrit says will be an age of theology. In other words, postulating who God is, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would say that we are now in the Stone Age, and that is when people don't understand the divine, and so thousands of years ago, the Hindu were saying this will be an age of technology, when people confuse technology for the divine. Hmm. And I think you can look around and see that there's some truth in that.
Mm-hmm. On that, yeah. So, and unfortunately, we have to end. I'd love to ask you 100 more questions, but one of the things I wanted to ask is that when we look at these things, is our karma, can we release our karma fairly swiftly by simply being not in response to it, but dropping into center and finding the divine within? Or,
well, I think all of those practices are very important. However, in the East, it is said that, you know, well, one of the things that is always taught in the East, that seeing the true nature of everything, which is that it's empty of any reality, but that's a very hidden thing. It takes lifetimes of work, generally, and so on, because you see the wall and it looks like it's there. You see the car coming at you and it really looks like it's there. And indeed, something is there because it will have an impact if you don't pay attention to it.
Mm-hmm.
But then there is also this understanding that there's only one thing that is more hidden than the truth of emptiness, and that is the mystery of karma. It's a very, very complicated thing. And even though we all try to explain it and we try to give advice about how to work with it and cut through it and so on, it's always bigger than can be put into words. Really, all one can do is cut through. And that is a process of continuing to look a whole lot, to see, well, there's what appears to be happening, and now I want to look at what's really happening. It appears that my mind is mad right now. But what's beneath that? And how could I look at this in a way to say that that maybe isn't what's really happening? Because, see, what people do is they say, I am angry. And as you know, using the words I am before something like an emotional state of anger confines the I am awareness that's in people to experience through that emotion, you see? So it's a very hidden thing, and it's kind of hard.
It's a journey.
To put into words in a quickie, I think you're asking this, but I feel some frustration because I can't be more clear with it. It's a very complicated and difficult situation.
You've helped so much, and unfortunately we have to end it, and I'd like to end with your Earth Healing Day, www.earthhealingday.com website for everyone to check into and join Sunday, the 15th of August from noon till 1, wherever you are, whatever your time frame is that right?
That's correct.
For shifting the collective, sending this whole global meditation out for the world. And what's your other website?
Well, we have the Vajra Flame is also a website that is masterdk.com, or the organizational one is www.vajraflame.org, and that's VAJRAFLAME.org. And anyway, you can feel free to play with all of those.
That's wonderful. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing you at the seminar on the 14th of August in Denver. And those Canadians, you get to one in Canmore, Alberta, I think on the 25th of October, is it?
September.
So thank you so much. I send many blessings out. So grateful that you're on the planet with us, if you're actually on the planet.
Well, I'm certainly around the planet, and I'm trying to hold the planet in my heart chakra. And sometimes when all that oil gets spilled around, it's a little hard, but we have to just clean it up on the etheric as well as on the physical, don't we?
Yes, I bet you're doing a lot of that, are you?
I am.
Oh, well, thank you so much.
And you're very welcome. And much love and blessing to all your listeners.
And to you. Thank you.
Thank you.
So this is Veronica Entwistle saying, wow, that was a lot of information, and I love the karmic parts. I feel like I've gotten some wheels under my shoes to get out of some of it, maybe, or maybe a better machete made of sparkling light or something. So if you'd like to email me, veronica@veronicaentwistle.com, and give your opinion and suggestions for other guests, I would love that. And if you have any feedback on Joelle Kuhl and Kathleen Kingdon, please check their websites. The Earth Healing Day is going to be a very, very interesting experience. We'll feel it. I know it. So thank you so much for listening and being in this community, this vibrational global community. Take in some blessings from the universe and send them out to one another. Good night.